listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go Giants! SF Giants! Let's go Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is the closing episode of the season that was 2013. Episode 54, the Sergio Romo episode. Pretty spot on, I think, to finish the season with episode 54. My name is Willie Dills, and I'm joined, of course, by Mr. Chad King. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Technically, this is probably like episode number 63.
Yeah. Well, we have bonus sodes in between.
And, no, we got to do the point. Exactly. Yeah. We were getting up there pretty high.
If anybody has been listening to the shows recently, and I know some of you have because I look at the numbers, you might realize that the bonus sodes are now the regular episodes. So this might be actually more of a bonus sode these days. But, of course, we're also joined by Ben Lee. What's up, Ben? How you doing, buddy?
So this is your bonus regular episode.
Yeah. Bonus regular sode.
On the We're at Zeke's Cast.
Yeah, we're not at Zeke's. Nobody is twerking on the bar.
That we know. Well, I mean, someone probably is, but we're not there to find out, which is just as well.
It's kind of sad, actually. I kind of wish I was.
I just want to know if somebody's twerking on the bar and eat a sloppy Joe.
Yeah. That was,
is that so wrong?
That was a very interesting episode. And I believe that was our latest episode, wasn't it?
Yes. That was several weeks ago.
So we haven't done a show in a while, and there's a couple reasons. One
depression.
Is laziness. The other one is that, you know, it's kind of depressing right now to be a Giants fan. I mean, it's still not that bad, obviously. We're still world champions.
You know, rough patch.
Yeah, but the Dodgers are still in the playoffs, and the Giants are out. Giants never even got there. So, as a Giants fan, it's a little tough. I mean, I'm basically watching baseball at this point just hoping that the Dodgers get out. Once the Dodgers are out, you know, I'll keep up with the World Series, but from a distance.
Yes.
I don't know. Are you guys watching the games hardcore? Or I mean, Ben, I know you're a pretty big just baseball fan across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's been hard to find time to watch much of the games, but I've been trying to at least keep track and kind of keep up on what's going on. And this postseason has had some pretty crazy moments, so I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, we had the other night, wasn't it Jonathan Sanchez who basically threw a no-hitter through six or whatever, but had six walks or something?
Meaning Anibal Sanchez?
Sorry, it was Anibal Sanchez. You're right.
I was going to say, I mean, that does sound like a Jonathan Sanchez no-hitter, though. You know, six walks, but a ton of strikeouts.
Yeah. No, I mean, I Sanchez. Everybody talking about Sanchez, and I just said the Jonathan word in front of it.
Anibal
Sanchez, who has thrown a no-hitter before, right? So,
Anibal Sanchez is a very talented, if sometimes slightly shaky pitcher, and he's really gotten a lot more consistent with the Tigers for the most part.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's that Tigers rotation is really, really dangerous looking. And if it wasn't for some miscues and some poor spots and the fact that their bullpen is not nearly as threatening as the rotation, that game yesterday might have been a lock. But
it was real exciting. And then suddenly, you know, grand slam by Poppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, Max Scherzer no hit them through five.
I mean, that they're definitely, I think the Tigers and Boston are two scary teams. So whoever comes out of the AL is going to be a tough competition for hopefully the Cardinals. And I'm just going to say that. I do believe, though, and we'll talk about this later on. I do believe that the pattern of the last 5 years is going to hold true again. I think it's going down.
So three in 5 years?
Yeah. Well, it goes Cardinals, Giants, Cardinals, Giants. That's all I'm saying. All right. We're not going to follow our normal format here because we're basically just doing like more of a season in review. So let's look back on the Giants season this year. It was not fantastic. to say the least. But it didn't start off that way. Now, we were in first place as late as, what was it, May?
May 15th.
May 15th, we were in first place. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm actually writing an article now. Between that period and when we got to our lowest point, we were by far the worst team in baseball by just an unbelievable.
Oh yeah, in all of baseball. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Worse than the Houston Astros, who
were
lost
incredibly bad.
More than 100 games.
But what's funny is then we bookended that by actually playing fairly decent baseball the last month of the season.
Yeah.
So it was pretty obvious to me, judging on that kind of arc of the Giants' season, that you know, there were some key players going down that really were the cause of the Giants not being able to contend, and then of course the Dodgers getting healthy and just absolutely going crazy. Because the Dodgers, we knew, were a dangerous team, and then they just had more injuries at the beginning, and then we had more injuries in the middle, and, you know, which is kind of how most baseball seasons tend to go. It's who stays the healthiest is really going to be who's going to reap the rewards at the end of the year. So Giants did not have that luck that they did in 2012 and also 2010 of just having everybody stay healthy throughout. So a couple of things here. First losing season since 2008. It's pretty crazy.
2008 was a pretty spectacular losing season. So, I mean,
yeah.
If that's how far back we have to go, I think we've done okay.
Yeah, it's not that bad. But the thing is that if you think about it, any baseball team that can have a stretch like we did has to feel fine about where they're at as far as, you know, the league is concerned. But
yeah, I just talked to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pittsburgh, their first winning season in 21 years.
That's right. Yeah.
Really,
first
though.
Time in the playoffs since Clemente was on the team, I believe, right? I mean,
just about. Crazy.
So the Giants, you know, we had a really, really rough stretch in the middle of the season, but ending, what is it, 76-86? It's only 10 games behind. It's not like we didn't end up in the cellar, which we definitely...
We were threatening to for a little while.
Threatening to,
yeah. Oh, it was very close. It was very close. And actually, we only finished two games ahead of the Rockies. So, yeah, it was close.
There is that. But September really did a big job in changing our position in the division, though. I mean, I would say even some of August, too, when we really started to pick it back up.
And the thing is that even though this team definitely underperformed as far as expectations were concerned, I don't feel like any of the players ever really got down on this team. I mean, the fact that Hunter Pence immediately went around and turned around and signed a contract, multi-year contract, before the season was even over, says how much faith this, you know, these players have in this team, in this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to leave. You know, nobody really thinks that this is a sinking ship. So that's a really good sign for the future as far as the SF Giants are concerned.
Well, the last game, excuse me, that we attended there, I was just watching batting practice, and Angel Pagan was just standing 5 feet away. He was just putting pine tar on his bat, getting his gloves ready. And I didn't know if it was appropriate to talk to the players or not, but it wasn't in an interview fashion. It was just chatting. And so I just went over and said, "Hey, Angel, how's the hamstring?" And we had about a 5-minute conversation, and Joe Castellano came over near the end and joined in as well. But what was really telling after sharing some hamstring horror stories is that
he
said,
"Some pretty good ones."
I have a good one. So yeah, he had a visceral facial reaction to when I was explaining that one. But he said, "You know, this team is good." He's all, "We had an off year. We had some injuries. The pitching maybe didn't, you know, hold up its end of the deal." But he's like, "I really believe in these guys." And he wasn't speaking to a reporter. I didn't have a microphone in his face. I wasn't writing anything down. It was really a casual conversation. Mm. And I could tell he was genuine. And it was really fascinating to hear kind of a very intimate kind of portrayal of what a player actually views his team as. I mean, certainly Pence signing and everything like that. But Gon and a lot of these guys absolutely believe in this team. He said, "We're going to be back next year. You better count on it." So it was pretty interesting.
Well, I think the fan base believes it as well, and you could tell that when at the end of the season, a team that's middle of the road at that point, schedule or standings wise, was still packing the house and still getting reactions as if we were in the playoff hunt. You know, I went to all three of those Dodger games at the end of the year, which the Giants actually took 2 out of 3, and you know, being at all three of those games, it still felt like that atmosphere in the stadium. And the Giants were mathematically eliminated long before. And the fan base was still, I mean, there was weird costumes and people going crazy, the signs, the, you know, painted faces and all that stuff. So,
Showing up in force.
Yeah,
for
this
sure.
Fan base is fully behind the group of guys that they're throwing out there right now. And I think nobody believes that the Giants are going to be a bad team next year. So, and there's a lot of things to really look forward to as far as some of the players who showed flashes this year, as far as the young guys, and then some of the guys who we have coming back. I mean, there's not a lot of things that we must do to become a contending team again. And we're going to talk about some of the changes that need to be made. But a few things that I'll mention. Buster Posey, I would call this an off year for Buster Posey. I don't think he's going to have, and in the end, his year was still decent, you know. Almost batted 300, 15 home runs, 72 RBIs. You still have to call this a down year for Buster Posey. I think this is below expectations for him. But again, I don't think that that there's any reason to worry about him.
I mean, come on, two stolen bases.
That's right. He only got caught once, man. Two out of three.
If you look at it, though, I mean, he led the team in on-base percentage at 371. Mm-hmm. You know, the only person who had a better OPS plus as far as just like in comparison to the league average.
Yeah.
Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, really, though, you know, this, I don't think that this is going to be a, if this is an off year for Posey, then we're in a pretty good spot because I think we can expect that other parts of the lineup are going to at least be able to pick up more slack like they did at the beginning and end of this year.
Yes.
There were a lot of guys definitely were able to bail out some of the starters.
Yeah. And I'll say this too. I think Pablo Sandoval had what I would consider an average year that he will have kind of when he just plays his up and down style of baseball. But if we can have another person who can bat fifth, and Pablo can when he's hot and can bat sixth when he's not, him having this type of year is going to be fine. A lot of people talk about Pablo as if we need to get rid of him. And I think, you know, Eric was even saying, oh yeah, we should get rid of him when we were talking to him at Zeke's when he was here. But, you know, my argument to those people is, who do we pick up instead of Pablo? And I've heard people say, oh, just play Arias. And I'm, well, no.
No.
This is, you know,
that's not
Arias
a solution.
Is not the answer. Yeah.
No. Arias is no.
Yeah. So Pablo's going into the last season of his contract. And I fully expect he's going to have a strong year next year. So I would say, though, batting about 280, 15 home runs, 80 RBIs, that's a standard average year for somebody like Pablo Sandoval. And he's capable of putting up much bigger numbers if it all comes together for him. Now, Hunter Pence definitely proved to me why we need to keep this guy around for a while.
Oh, very much.
You know, I mean, hitting almost 30 home runs in AT&T Park is no small task. He can kind of fall backwards into 100 RBI, 30 home run seasons, it seems. This guy just, for whatever reason, just...
He just trips and there's 100 RBIs.
100 RBIs. Well, he plays every single day, and his body is fully capable of him doing that. He plays hard every single day. And even when, you know, he doesn't really get cheated out of at-bats, I'll say that. You know, a lot of times he gets into 0-2 holes really, really quickly. But he does it by being aggressive at the plate. And he's the perfect guy to have on your team as either your 3 or 4 hitter with Buster Posey as kind of interchangeable parts, I think. And we'll probably see him batting 4 for a while to come, I think. He's the biggest power threat we have, and
And I think that it's nice to finally get to free Posey up a little bit, because Posey, with the exception of speed, Posey has really always been a 3-hole kind of hitter in my eyes.
He has, yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to treat him.
And he doesn't hit for...
Well, and I mean, he can be a... he's got enough... he's gap to gap. He's a talented contact hitter when he needs to be, even though he has some power. You know, he's going to run into one every so often, but a guy like Pence is going to run into him on a regular basis. Yeah. And
Pence is more often than Posey does, so...
Really, and I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that you're expecting out of a traditional 4-hole spot. And, you know, if anybody's going to put somebody traditional in a 4-hole spot, it's going to be Bruce Bochy. So... Yeah. Pence lines up perfectly with that philosophy.
Here's the other beauty of Pence being your 4 hitter, is that in those situations where the Giants go down in order in the first inning, you basically have another leadoff hitter starting your next inning. Because Pence,
with his speed, you know, 22 base, he's 20-20 this year.
If he gets on base, he can steal a base, and he can create something out of your 5, 6, and 7 guys after he's on base. So
I will say it's worth pointing out that he actually had as many walks as Brandon Belt, but with that said, he had about 100 more plate attempts.
Right. So, yeah. But yeah, they also had comparable numbers of strikeouts too. They're similar hitters, I think, in the way that when they make contact, they hit the ball hard. But they also have a couple of holes, and if the pitchers know about those holes, they can exploit them.
Agreed. Although I do think
down and in for both of them. So.
Well, you know, it's nature holds parts 27 and 100.
Let's go in the dirt. Let's swing.
Yeah. I got it. The real issue for the Giants this season was the black hole that was left field, unfortunately. And I don't want to say that as if Gregor Blanco is like some terrible player. But
no, I mean, I'd say he's above replacement, but he's sort of pushing league average as a hitter.
Yes.
But he, I mean, absolutely, though, his defense, I think, never really wavered. That was one of the great things about having Blanco in left is you essentially had two center fielders until Pagan went down.
Yeah, yeah. And now Gregor Blanco makes a lot of sense as some sort of a platoon situation.
Or a fourth outfielder.
Fourth outfielder.
But, either or.
You know, if you can actually swap him depending on who the pitcher is, you know, and he gets to only face, you know, the correct matchups for him, he's fine. But the problem is, once he had to play every single day, like the weaknesses were exposed, and in the end, though, I mean, yeah, still 2.5 WAR, so you know, 2.5 wins above replacement, so he's better than anybody you could just shove in there. Now the hope is next year we actually shore up left field and keep him as the fourth outfielder. And I think that's his perfect. That's like his happy zone. He can play any single part of the field in the outfield and do fine. And if he doesn't have to bat higher than seventh, he's good to go. He's just not your leadoff guy for an entire season. And that.
Well, and I think it's safe to say, you know, Andres Torres probably isn't coming back as much as we love him. Juan Perez, I think, is probably the incumbent fifth outfielder, with a couple of guys like Roger Kieschnick kind of standing, and Francisco Peguero actually too, who is kind of interesting despite not having gotten a lot of chances to show off this season. Yeah. I think that Peguero and Kieschnick are both sort of interesting on the outside looking in, but I think Perez has to be sort of anointed the incumbent fifth outfielder if ever there were one.
Well, he's the ultimate pinch runner as far as speed goes. So. Mm-hmm.
Perez is the Darren Ford that can kind of hit of the future.
Exactly, and can also field like crazy. I mean, the guy's got a rocket arm.
Oh, absolutely.
He just hits to everything. So he's a great guy to have as a defensive replacement late in the game and all that.
Well, stuff. And if you get somebody in left who can kind of mash, and we're sort of like looking towards the end of, say, Blanco's contract, I think Perez suddenly looks as, you know, you say, well, in a year or two, we take a look again after he's had a little bit more time in the majors, and we say, well, what do we have in Perez? Is he potentially starting material? Is he potentially like platoon/frequent-use outfielder material? Like, what do we have with him? And I think we've got enough of a taste to say, you know, I really like this Perez kid. I want to see more of him.
Yeah.
To get a better idea. That's kind of where I'm at.
The problem for him is he's not going to get, you know, he doesn't have a lot of time before he reaches that, you know, 27, 28-year-old range where you're supposed to be at the prime.
Right.
So he's going to need some time to really, he's going to need to develop fast if he's going to want to be someone who makes an impact at the big league level. But
I think that's the downside of Perez as the fifth outfielder, is pretty much just that you're not going to get as much time to see him play, and that's something that they're going to want.
Yeah.
So I mean, it becomes a question of, you know, who do you think you can afford less developmental time? And when you look at that, I have to actually lean Peguero. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's already gotten some of this, you know, developmental time, but he's still pretty raw, which is a little unfortunate when you've given him as many opportunities as you have. So,
and so in a way, it's hard to feel like either there's like, I feel like you kind of know what you have with Peguero with the chance of a little upside. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Perez, I feel like we're just starting to get the idea of what he is. Yeah. But that's based on seeing him in the majors perspective.
Well, Perez got almost 100 at bats and he batted almost 260. And, you know, I mean, that's fine. You know, I mean, that's totally doable, because if you think about, like, Blanco got 450 at-bats and hit just over 260. So it's not like you're losing much, you know what I mean, when you pop him in there. And he's got more upside. So, but I think really, and we're going to talk about this later, I think there needs to be some sort of move made at left field. And that's Mm-hmm. That's pretty obvious to most of the Giants fan base. But let's talk about why pretty we much. Didn't win at all. So, Chad, you have some stuff noted here. What do you think it was that the Giants were just missing this year?
Yeah, we already touched upon some of this, but of course the starting pitching just bombed, especially after they fell out of first place.
And you know,
they
were not just like the last couple guys. I mean, from top to bottom,
no,
basically.
It was a four-man bomb.
Yeah, four-man bomb,
exactly. We have an interesting habit of developing different stoppers every year. Lincecum was very much the stopper for a couple of years, and suddenly Matty Cain was the stopper. And this year, it was really Bumgarner became the stopper. He was always the guy that you could... Yeah, he was always a guy you could rely on to have a good outing, even though during our really bad stretch, even he wasn't getting quality starts. He wouldn't make it, you know, five, six innings either.
But he also got caned multiple times this year.
Right. Yeah. But the issue was that there were sometimes he didn't make it out of the fifth or sixth inning. And that was when we hit the really rough patch. We had a period where I think our first quality start in ages was Chad Godin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, Godin definitely had some quality starts.
Chad Godin came in and saved us. That was awkward.
I think some of the positives you have to take out of it is that Cain, over his last 11 starts, had a 2.33 ERA.
Yeah.
Bumgarner was strong all the way down. Lincecum, of course, had a much better second half.
No, he had a huge resurgence.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost like we watched him turn into a different pitcher this year in a way.
Yeah.
And even Vogelsong near the end, he had a couple of good starts, and he even admits now that pitching in the WBC might have been a mistake and put a little wear and tear on his arm. Mm-hmm. So I think if you take all those things together, I don't think there's any reason you can't expect Cain, Bumgarner, and you know if they can sign Timmy and Vogelsong, they're going to perform more like their 2011 counterparts.
I believe you're right. Yeah, and I do think though that fifth spot has some real promise to it as well with what we saw out of Godin
and Petit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
you still got Eric Sirkamp waiting in the wings, exactly. You know, recovering from TJ surgery. So I mean, depending on how he's feeling.
Yeah.
So then potential offseason pickup like Arroyo or someone.
Exactly,
so
that's mm-hmm. what I was gonna say.
And I mean, Arroyo has said he likes pitching here in the past. The guy's, you know, he's not any nuttier than the rest of the team. I mean, Bronson Arroyo
saying outright that he wants to be a Giant. So
yeah, and I mean, I'm not complaining with that. Uh-huh. Depending on what it's at the cost of, certainly. But for the most part, you know, like Bronson Arroyo is just quirky enough to fit right in here. I would have been a lot more opposed to it a couple of years ago, but I think I've made peace with the idea of Bronson Arroyo as a Giant potentially. You know, I could see it working out.
And he'll replace Zito as the guitar playing clubhouse guy.
Pretty much.
Right? So, yeah. Now the thing is, the Giants are in a pretty solid position with the fact that the aforementioned Barry Zito is coming off the books. And also, Tim Lincecum's not going to come back at the same price he got paid this year. There's just no way that anybody's going to pay him 20 plus million. So,
not even.
Yeah. So that's, you can call that savings right there as well.
And I think that the way he ended the year, he easily gets like 10 to 15. I don't think he gets 20 to 25.
Based on the fact that there's not a lot out there,
that will help.
He'll still get 12 million. You know, I think he still will. But, you know, whether he's worth that or not, I think the Giants will take a chance on him at 12. I think that makes sense to the Giants, considering what our options are right now. So
yeah, but Sabian already kind of noted that he was going to probably throw a qualifying offer at Lincecum. I mean, obviously things could change. They have exclusive negotiating rights until 5 days after the World Series ends, so they still are within that window. But if it does get to that point where they haven't struck a deal, basically it's kind of a last-ditch Hail Mary. They'll throw a qualifying offer at him, which is the average salary of the top, whatever, 125 players.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're estimating it'll be about like $14 million this year. Yeah,
14 to 14 and a half, which, you know, it's like, look, you know, so Timmy either accepts the qualifying offer for 1 year for 14 and a half, or he rejects it. At that point, obviously the Giants can still sign him. Yeah. It's just that he's an unrestricted free agent. Whoever signs him that's not in the top 10 teams, or the bottom 10 teams, I should say, they would get a first round pick. So if it's someone like Seattle, which there's, you know, been rumors about that, the Giants, I think, get a second round pick, not a first round pick. So I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, if he rejects a 14 or 14 and a half deal, what does that say?
I don't think he gets that much.
No, but unless he's looking for longevity with the, you know, finally. I mean, because Lincecum has been good enough that he's been able to go year to year and know that he's still going to make a decent amount. That was the reason that we were never able to lock him up. Although some people now look back at that and go, well, good thing we didn't lock him up. But you know, I mean, at the time, you couldn't have blamed us for doing it.
No, we wanted to, for sure.
And sure.
No Giants fan would have been upset if we'd given Tony a 5-year contract.
You know? Not at all. And I mean, it still has worked out. It still worked out better than 7 years of occasionally awesome and mostly painful Barry Zito. Mm-hmm. But with that said, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that Lincecum could turn down a qualifying offer, but not all of them make a lot of sense. There is a potential that he could make more somewhere else, but more realistically, there's a potential he could get signed longer someplace else.
Yeah,
unless he thinks that... Right, and I mean, what you're banking on otherwise, essentially, Tim would then be banking on the idea that he can do better next year enough that he's going to get a more lucrative offer, as opposed to... You know, because if you take the 15 now and you run, there's the chance that if you're bad enough next year, you start making like 5 a year for 2 years.
Yeah.
And there's a chance that right now, where you're at right now, maybe you can wrangle 10 to 12 a year for 4 or 5 years from the right team. Well, that's, you know, especially with this starting pitcher pool.
This is his high point, you know, and mm-hmm. the fact is, yeah, he's 29. He's going to turn 30. Next season.
And unless he develops some new tricks, you know, unless we see a lot more of the pitcher we saw at the end of this year, it's going to start getting shaky soon. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So, Chad, what other reasons were you looking at for this year's?
Well, they definitely.
Of a World Series ring.
They definitely lacked the bullpen depth that they've had in years past.
A lot of that was due to injuries, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely didn't help.
Yeah. We didn't have Affelt pretty much the entire season.
No, but that was the veneer, you know? It's like you just lose the surface, and then boom, the core is exposed, and that was the problem.
Mm. And then we also lost Casilla for a little while due to him having to get the freaking grossness lanced or whatever. But, that was the thing. It was like one guy going down, exposing the fact that we have no – and then, of course, Godin having to move into a starting hole.
Yeah, he took away the long relief guy.
You had these holes exposed where suddenly we were plugging the gaps with guys who
Guillermo Moscoso
did not have they did not have the experience at the big league level. Contos clearly didn't have whatever.
Contos had a horrible year.
Yeah, whatever it was that we saw in him the year before was just not there. Casilla is just a guy who will just always have like a low 2 ERA and. It's just, I don't know what the hell.
Yeah,
complain about this guy, but I don't see it.
I mean, I was complaining about Mache, but he ended up coming up with like a 2-3, which is kind of surprising to me.
Over the season, and that's at 51 appearances, so.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had some bad spots, but for the most part, Mache actually did a decent job. My biggest issue, however, is really Jose Mijares.
Yeah, Mijares had a bad season as well. So you talk about Mijares and Contos both struggling, and these were guys who... it's not like we chucked them in there a few times. I mean, they both got heavy innings.
Mijares got used a lot, almost a lot more than some other guys that I think I would have preferred to see in that position. But the issue is we didn't have a lot of lefties beyond Lopez. Mm-hmm. Lefty depth after, you know, with Affelt out, lefty depth is something we just couldn't put together.
Have. And Javier Lopez, I think, can go longer than we let him go, but he's so good in that, you know, Lugie type spot that you want to be able to have him go every day
And I mean, Lopez is one of those guys, one of the few guys I think we've seen this year who can actually command a decent amount of money as a Lugie.
And
that's probably one of the reasons he's saying he really wants to test the free agent market, much to the dismay of Giants fans everywhere.
We want him back for sure, but I don't blame the guy after having a 1.83 ERA over 69 appearances.
Over 40 innings almost, you know.
To see who else wants him to get lefties out for him, so.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, like, in almost 40 innings, the guy issued 12 walks.
Yeah.
You know, allowed one home run. That's insane.
Let's talk about some of the bright spots that we did see, because I did feel like Rosario and Dunning showed some flashes, even though in the overall grand scheme of things, they didn't have a huge impact. I think both of them proved that they're almost there, almost ready to rock.
Dunning as a back of the bullpen guy already, not as a long relief guy. I feel like his stuff is going to be, from what I've just little I've seen, which, you know, Dunning's only had so many appearances and I haven't gotten to see all of them.
25 innings pitched for the year, so.
Yeah, and I think things will be a little different by next year too, just because he'll gain some confidence after having a pretty good season for starters here. But I think as a back of the bullpen guy in middle relief, I actually feel really good about Jake Dunning now.
Absolutely. I mean, he pitched.
He's gotten out of some jams.
24 years old, and he got a lot of experience this year just for the sheer amount of time he actually was with the big club. So
yeah, he's gotten out of jams. He's shown himself to be a good fielding pitcher as well, which is something that's always nice for us to have. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, he'll be a good arm for us next season. So I think we'll see him. But there's definitely going to be a couple of holes to fill. Depending on if we do get Affelt back for a full year without having him, you know, open any hamburger packages or anything like that. But
use a butter knife, Jeremy.
Yeah, just get someone else to do it. Get your wife to do it, man. So that was another definitely a big factor. And then your last one, I think, pretty much hits the nail on the head, and that's the fact that we're missing one big hitter, which kind of is a continuing
sort
saga
of for the turned Giants. Into Hunter Pence towards the end of the year, but I don't think any of us sort of realized that was happening until almost like August.
He went
ape spit.
But the problem is, though, he can't carry a team by himself.
No, Pence has never been that kind of guy, but he is
Bonds, you know, who
right
score runs for you just on the fact that they're going to walk him every single time, stuff like that. He's a good hitter, but he needs to be surrounded by other good hitters, because, you know,
or at least like other halfway decent hitters, which is when the lineup is functioning for the most part. That's about right. But and then we saw that towards the end of the year when the lineup really started functioning, and you gave Pence a couple of opportunities and he ran with them, and not a lot of guys on the lineup really could run with it the way he did. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, not to discount Pence's value in any way, because on a team that's built pretty well, Pence is a huge, huge, huge chip to have on your side.
We actually have our lineup, which is Pagan followed by Scudero, followed by probably Posey, then Pence, then Sandoval or Belt behind them. You know, that's a strong starting five. That's going to score you a lot of runs. But we just didn't have that the whole season.
No.
You know, once Pagan went down, nobody was setting the table for these guys. So it's kind of amazing that Pence got to 99 RBIs, considering, you know, how many guys were on base when he would come to the plate. It was rough going for him. You know, he was actually getting on base himself and scoring the runs in a lot of situations. And that's not where he's the best for us, you know.
So I have a question too. Given that we've locked Scudero up for another, 2 years after this? We've got 2 more years of Scudero, who's having some trouble with mallet fingers still and may very well see limited playing time next year as well.
He has back issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Who do you put in at second base when he's out? And two, who do you put in the two hole? Like, do you leave the second baseman there? Do you move Crawford up?
I think, between Abreu and Noonan, I think those two guys are going to be the guys who are going to spell Scudero. Mm-hmm. And I think when they are in, I think you put Brandon Belt as the two hitter. And you go Posey, Pence, Pablo, basically. I think that's generally what you're going to see. Depending on who we pick up for left field, though. If we pick up a guy who's more of a contact gap-to-gap type hitter, that guy might slide into the second hole. But if we have a power hitter, he will be 5 or 6. So. It really depends on that, but I don't think we're going out for anybody. I think it's going to be Abreu and Noonan.
Yeah, well, unless there's some like utility infielder hits the market again.
Sure.
And I think that there is always a chance too. Like, let's face it, there's always a chance you see Joaquin Arias.
Well, Joaquin Arias can play anywhere, so
he really was a second baseman before a third baseman. Yeah. You know, he was a third baseman because we kept putting him in to spell Pablo. But
has anybody ever seen Adrianza play second base? Because that kid impressed the hell out of me from shortstop.
I agree with that.
Not going to take over for Crawford, but I mean, can you do worse?
No, but he looks slick. Looked good.
No, I think Adrianza is in a really good. He had some really nice showings. I definitely agree.
Yeah, he's right now his bat is the question, but God damn, that guy can field.
Nah, if you play shortstop, you can play second or third.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's just it.
Well, and we saw Emmanuel Burris, average shortstop plus second baseman for the most part. I mean,
that's true.
You know, certainly for instance,
Adrianza is a step up from
that. And it's worth pointing out that Abreu and Adrianza are both switch hitters. Yeah, so flexibility wise, that may make them more valuable as pinch hitters, or it may make them more valuable to put in the lineup. It's, depending on how Bochy feels on a given day and which way the coin he flips goes.
Bochy has no issue with flipping around players throughout a season. I mean, that guy.
Right. How many lineups did we go through? I mean,
he looks at what the matchups are, and he looks at what he thinks the best lineup's going to be that day, and that's what he works with. He doesn't just plug guys in and go, that's what it is, and if it doesn't work, screw it, we're sticking with it. Dusty Baker was more that style. I mean, when a guy was your one hitter, he was your one hitter with Dusty Baker. Mm-hmm. Bruce Bochy is much more of a flexible manager. So I'm going to say that the big key for the Giants not going all the way and winning it all was just Angel Pagan. When he went down, I don't think any of us thought that this was the end of the season. But and it was
suddenly it was.
And it was the high point of the year at that time. I mean, the Giants, the walk-off inside the park home run was incredible. And then he was down. Nobody really knew how long. And then even when he was supposed to come back, he was down for even more. So that really, that right there was the one thing that happened throughout the season that you can point to that says, okay, the Giants were good, then they were bad without Pagan, then he came back and they were good again.
Well, they were above 500 when he was in the lineup, both in the beginning and the end of the season. And I mean, some people might call it coincidence, but you look at runs scored and everything else. I mean, obviously, he's not affecting you know pitchers.
No,
you know, there's a limited effect there. But
no, but he it affects the morale and how well the team is able to cover up. Because at the beginning of the year, the starters had some issues too, but they were able to cover it up with a strong offense.
Our offense was really good, and we were outscoring the other team. It doesn't matter. You know, what the final score was, a win is a win, and we were winning more often than we were losing. Suddenly Pagan goes down, and everything stalled out as far as the offense was concerned. You just didn't have that spark plug at the top, and you were filling in guys who just weren't getting the job done. And it's just, it became very apparent in August that this team was not going to be good without Angel Pagan.
Well, I go back to that conversation I had with him on the field, and I said, oh, well, they really missed you this year. And he kind of gave me the standard, oh, you know, thanks, I appreciate that. I said, well, you guys were above 500 at the beginning of the year when you're in the lineup. You went down there way under 500. You come back and suddenly you're above 500 again.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, that's kind of true, but thanks, I appreciate it, you know. Well, so I think he knows.
I think he's aware that he's a big part of this club, and, you know, that hopefully to me what that means is that he will work, extremely hard in the offseason to make sure he comes, you know, at 100% at the beginning of the year and is fully conditioned. So, and obviously you can't train for a freak injury like hustling around the bases for an inside the park home run and hurting yourself in the process, but
He says his hammy cannot be pulled anymore. He was describing the surgery process to me, and he said that the way they took the tendons and bolted it back in somehow, he's like, literally that portion that tore before cannot tear again.
Like, he implied it's just impossible now. Yeah. Which I don't,
well, let's see, let's
and
test
I was like,
that
well,
out
I don't understand. So yeah, so what they did, I was like, okay, I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was like, you could pull your other hamstring though, right? And he said, well, yeah.
It's like, yeah, but let's not talk about that.
But I mean, it's fine, because I'm not going to do
this hamstring. I cannot pull again.
So Ben, was there any keys besides the ones that we've mentioned that you think may have been a big cause for the Giants not winning at all this year?
I mean, I'm sure there's a couple, but the one that really jumps out to me is just when guys like Pagan got hurt, it really made it clear that our farm system is pretty strong in certain respects, but our upper farm system is really just kind of decimated.
Yeah.
We don't have much in the upper minors that's really ready to step to the major leagues in an emergency. And
we don't have a guy who can just replace an everyday player.
Right. I mean, you know, we started pulling Guillermo Moscoso. We started pulling in Jeff Francoeur.
Was the answer. We didn't find that Pat Burrell and Cody Ross is what happened, you know.
Right. And I mean, you know, the thing about Cody Ross was Cody Ross didn't step in when things got really bad. Cody Ross was kind of a happy accident.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Francoeur was
getting acquired by the Padres.
Yeah.
Right. It was essentially they were just trying to keep him from going to another team, and then they ended up keeping him around and it worked out perfectly. That wasn't really going to be the case in this situation. They weren't making any strategic moves that were going to turn into happy accidents. These were all reactionary.
Desperation is what this was.
To some extent.
We need anybody who can.
We need anybody. And in fairness, like, I finally came to terms with the Francoeur move, even though it turned out to run about kind of how we thought it would. He was a really nice guy. We loved having him around the team, except when he was playing. But I think you saw it when we started bringing up, you know, I mean, Perez turned out to be, I think, not even a happy accident. Like, we had a feeling like Juan Perez had been decent in the minors for a while. We just hadn't really gotten to see him at the big league level. And then he came up and he in some ways for his age and for how much playing time he got, he just blew the big league level up. But And, you know, a couple of guys I think turned out pretty well. Jake Dunning definitely comes to mind. But then for each of those, you had a couple of guys that would come up, would hang out for, you know, they hung out for a little bit and then they were gone.
Yeah.
Cole Gillespie comes to mind, you know, well, even though he's not really a young, but
time in the sun and then, you know, fell back off and came back to earth. But Kieschnick as well, you know, had a little run there where it was like, oh, who is this kid? And then, oh, okay, it's 200. All right.
Yeah, and some of the ones that we were, you know, kind of looking at with the most promise, I think, didn't really get a lot of chances. You know, Johnny Manel really only had a couple shots and had one real nice at bat, of course. But
well, I'm going to bring up one last point here, and that is the Giants did not win it all this year because of the Dodgers. The Dodgers got ungodly hot in the second half of this season.
Juan Uribe got ungodly hot.
Yeah, Juan Uribe. But, I mean, the addition of Puig and then Uribe getting hot and, you know, Kemp coming back and
things just kind of they did what they've done for us in the last couple of years. They just started clicking.
Yeah, no, they absolutely clicked and they all clicked
42-8.
And yeah, they went 42-8 and it's really
they clicked in 42 out of 50 games. Okay,
I don't
sure.
I think that no matter how well we played, we were going to match blows with the Dodgers the way they found their stride, you know. So it's unfortunate that the Giants had to tank at the same time the Dodgers just went on a tear. But even if we hadn't tanked as completely as we did, I'm not sure we would have, you know, we would have been looking at a wild card potentially, if anything. So
yeah, I don't know if we could have kept up with that the way that they were playing.
Well, just think of how much worse it could have been if the Giants didn't play well against the West. They had a winning record in the West and a winning record against the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And if that had, you know, gone the other way, the way they played the East and the Central, I mean, they would have finished 30 games out of first place.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, the Dodgers had 92 wins this year, and even without some of these things, the Giants finished 16 behind that. I mean, there's a few things could have gone your way, but I don't think they were 16 game swings, you know. So I really do think that, you know, it's just one of those years where those guys had it going this year and we did not. So let's move to the off season, because you know, we could talk about last year all we want, but let's look ahead now.
I'd like to point out, if anybody missed it, somebody posted a meme at Brandon Belt. It was one of the like the standard meme crying face, and it said, "But Brandon Belt said you can't buy chemistry."
Yeah.
Did anybody see the response to that, where Brandon Belt just posted a picture of his ring, and the guy's response just said, "Touche."
Yeah.
Nice.
Not a lot you can say to that. So
I mean, there's a chance, as upsetting as it is, that the Dodgers get their own this year. But until then, that was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing: they're right now down 2-1 to a really good Cardinal team, who's got some insane pitching of their own and some really good bats
and some insane batting of their own. Yeah,
so it's not like I think the Dodgers have that swagger about them right now,
and they're facing Nolasco tomorrow night.
Well, see, the Dodgers had this swagger about them as soon as they got that, you know, as hot as they did in the second half. But I think they're starting to realize, like,
I mean, you know, a deserved one here, you know. But right, I mean, the swagger was admittedly deserved. They went 42-8, but you know, that's it. You get into the postseason and everything changes.
Yeah, nobody cares how hot you were. Now it matters who's hot now, and it matters who's hot one game to the next. So Puig went, 0-10 over the first couple games of this series with, like, 6 strikeouts? I mean, everybody's capable of sucking. And I think Puig right now is kind of learning, like, oh, I'm not going to be the best player on the field every single game I play? Okay, that's interesting. And he's going to have to deal with that fact. So let's talk about the offseason. So, Chad, you brought up a point here. How many home runs did San Francisco left fielders hit this year?
Do you have the answer to that?
I do.
Okay. Is it going to depress me beyond?
Well, what's your guess?
I'll guess 6.
You're ahead by 50%.
Really?
4.
No.
I've got home runs. 5 listed, actually.
So I have Torres had 2.
Not Blanco all players,
3, but they probably
the actual players that were playing left field at the time. Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm sure
they hit 4 home runs.
Pagan hit one from right.
Actually, Francisco Pagero hit 1, so 5.
Well, the source I have is incorrect. 4 or 5, it's all the same.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, either way, it's horrible. Francisco Pagero is your only redeeming factor, keeping it from being 4.
And that was on the last day of the season.
Right. Our left fielders hit fewer home runs than, like, other members of the team themselves.
Yeah. I think about Barry Bonds. I mean, he had 5 home runs in, you know, a couple of days sometimes. Yeah. You know,
usually.
So you're talking about over 162 games, and they hit 5.
Oof. It's pretty bad.
In fairness, our second baseman hit 4.
Yeah, but you know, so our second baseman, we've seen
expect him, more from the outfield.
We've come a long way from the days of Ray Durham, I know. But when you're looking at Abreu, Arias, Scudero, and Noonan,
not a lot of power in those four names.
Basically, but 2 from Abreu in 107 plate attempts.
Here's the thing, though:
2 from Scudero.
Do you need to hit home runs from left field, or I mean, is that something that?
Well, if you hit 250,
yeah, that's true. So right. I think the Giants need 15 plus out of left field. I think.
I think the Giants either need 15 plus out of left field, or left field has to magically turn into this on base of like 360, 370.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got it. They need some kind of offensive production, whether it's getting on base, or whether it's cranking home runs. And I mean, a guy who plays like Perez did towards the end of the year potentially does something like that, especially with the amount of speed he brings to the table. A guy who plays like Blanco did in 2012.
Yeah.
But.
So we've already talked about Lincecum and potentially Vogelsong, but let's talk about some of the options that we might have at left field. I definitely think that the name that stands out to me is Shin-Soo Choo.
I don't see Choo is one of those guys that you pick up and then you say, well, there goes Lincecum, for example.
He's going to cost some money.
Right. I mean, I realize Zito's coming off the books, but we do overstate a little bit what that means for the team. I do think the team will also probably, may very well increase payroll a little bit because they've had the flexibility to do that in recent years. And there's no reason that they may not try it again. But it's incredibly unlikely, I think, that we pick up one of the really big left fielders and Lincecum, which is a shame.
Are there any names that make a lot of sense to you that are actually out there, Ben?
Do we know, is Andre Ethier is in a contract year, isn't he?
I believe so.
So, I mean,
but he's also been hurt the entire season, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in a way,
definitely a gamble.
A little bit, yeah. And I mean, that may very, the last thing you want to do is bring in somebody that gets hurt and here it's Gregor Blanco again. But the issue is all the biggest names right now, and I mean the 3 that we noted here, you're really looking at Chu, Beltran, and Ellsbury. Mm-hmm. They're all going to command a pretty decent sum of money. Yeah. Ellsbury has been...
Sorry. Ethier is signed through 2017.
Okay. 2017. Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, so he's out.
I take that back.
But Pete Ethier... No, wait, sorry.
I'm gonna pull up Kotz and bring up the free agent list here in the meantime, but carry on.
Yeah, see who's out there. I mean, I don't know, it's right now the way things are looking, there's not going to be a massive talent pool out there that we can just pick and choose the guy we want. Whoever we go after is going to take a little bit of a commitment by Giants brass, and that's just the way it is right now, and that's the way it is this year. So unless we internally find the answer, it may be something where we have to decide Lincecum or this guy, who's going to bring the most value. I know that the Giants currently are saying that Lincecum is a very high priority for them to bring back, but you got to look at this left field situation, and you have to regard it highly. It's an important problem for the Giants. And there's not a lot of great options right now. Chad, is there anybody that you think would fit perfectly in the Giants system?
I really do like Ellsbury.
Yeah.
But like I was saying you before the show, and Ben was offline at this point, Ken Rosenthal is reporting that they're estimating that he's going to command $21 million per year, which to me just seems too high. But regardless, even
if it was in general, but...
But if that's the market that's going to bear, even if it's 19 or 18, I mean, that's just, it's a little too much for the Giants to pay. If, like you said, they're trying to keep Lincecum and maybe
retain
Boltsong or get Arroyo or what have you. Yeah. But
so he made 9 last year. He's 30 years old. You can't really see him taking less considering that he had a good season.
And he, I mean, Ellsbury is fantastic. pretty talented.
Fantastic. I mean, this guy stole 70 bases one year. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Like, he's got that speed defense, and I think he would plug in. Yeah, he's not going to hit, you know, 30 home runs a year out of left field, but
that's not what you need.
When he's going to give you that on-base percentage we're talking about. So,
does anybody know if the Yankees re-signed Grandy? I didn't look that one up. Great, Curtis Granderson ended up getting an extension, or
no? If he did, how old is he now?
I haven't heard.
He's only like in his early 30s, right? Let's
if
see.
That, yeah.
Yeah. So he's 32. Signed through 2013. I don't. I mean, he's thinking about
it. Yeah, I know he's open to an extension, but whether or not, I don't know whether he's taking one. No,
this
so
is,
I mean,
this is last year's contract. There's nothing about a new contract at this time.
Okay.
And he was signed 6 years at $43 million. So. Well, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going up from that after the season he had, after the last two seasons he's had. But again, he's a gamble, you know?
Right. I mean, Grandy can be a little bit injury prone. You know, you've got it, you have to embrace that at the same time. Like, and that's the issue is a couple of the best guys. Hey, that's the thing that's been about Chu and this year Beltran, I think, in Ellsbury is, you know, it's not like they haven't gotten hurt necessarily, but you don't notice that they've missed a ton of time. Like, each of them has had a really solid season.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure that Chu got hurt much at all. Because, I mean, beyond that, we're looking at, you know, as far as, like, other options out there, you know, we're looking at, like, Nelson Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick Ankiel, you know.
Yeah. Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I think what's intriguing is that Cuban guy, Jose Abreu, because, look, I mean, they obviously recognize what Puig and others have done for the league. I mean, they've certainly struck out on Cuban players in the past, but, you know, there's definitely a couple of reaming successes right now. And if they were to sign him and he does play first base, because they said apparently there's no way he can play outfield. And this, he is a first baseman / DH. Mm-hmm. There's just no way he's going to be in the outfield. They're talking about putting Belt out in left field. And, you know, Belt's stick is great, but, man, you really degrade your defense if you put Belt out in left field.
Yeah.
And if you move Belt from first to left field and you put Abreu at first, you're double degrading your defense.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That is better first base. Defensively.
Because, yeah, I mean, Belt's an above average first baseman minimum, and at best, he's kind of an average left fielder unless his routes get a lot better over the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, he's clearly been, and especially by the end of the year, he was very much an above average hitter. Mm-hmm. Abreu profiles as being an at least above average to higher hitter, like somewhere around the lines of ridiculous is what seems to be the buzz around him would seem to suggest. But from what he seems to be profiling as, it's like, put him anywhere other than first base at your own risk.
Well,
and that, you know.
Right now, the buzz is that the Giants are leading the way as far as him. So, you know, I mean, if
how many Abreus do you need? We just need an infield full of Abreus.
If that's the case, though, that could mean that there is some sort
anybody
of.
Anybody know what Bobby Abreu is up to?
To deal with this, yeah.
But
there,
sure, I
mean, there could be a plan, and as painful as that might be, the plan might be to move Belt. You know, I mean, if we pull this guy in and then we. Up, you know, we trade up with Brandon Belt.
Mm-hmm.
That could work out well if the Giants can pick up a left fielder in that scenario. And I'm sure there's a lot of teams that would love to have a guy like Brandon Belt, who's definitely on the upswing of his career. So,
sure. And I mean, even to be honest, if we keep Belt around and we put him in left, and Abreu ends up having a pretty decent bat, I'm not going to be as upset about the defensive downgrade.
No.
Because Belt has shown that he's passable in left. It's just that we've been treated to Blanco all year. And, you know, it doesn't get, like, defensive wise, it doesn't get a lot better than watching Pagan, Perez, Blanco, Pence all year.
You can afford a little bit of a downgrade in left field, and prove that with Burrell if the bat is there, and if you pick up the slack somewhere else, and
or even Bonds, obviously. Right,
well, and that's the thing is, if Abreu is as good of a bat as we're led to believe, then you're picking up the slack somewhere else.
Exactly. You're
because there was
the
nothing in left field.
Yeah.
So you take Brandon Belt, move him to left, assume maybe he loses a couple of points because he's distracted by a new position, even though I don't think that's necessarily true. Throw in Abreu and assume that he's going to perform somewhere around the level of Belt, maybe with a few walks.
Okay. Well, this
That looks pretty nice.
This is all very interesting stuff, and we're definitely going to, we'll be doing some episodes during the offseason. Generally, we do less than we do during the season, obviously, but.
That may be setting the bar really low this year, though.
But the fact is, as things happen, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. But let's talk about some of the highlights. We don't want it to all be doom and gloom. And there were definitely some really, really cool things that happened this season. First of all, we'll talk about Posey walk-off homer versus the Dodgers. And
yes,
that
please.
That was beautiful.
And that was his first career walk-off, which was pretty surprising at that point.
And that,
two World Series trophies, an MVP, Rookie of the Year. A comeback player of the year. He's never done that before.
And that was at the point of the year when the Giants were seemingly having a walk-off like every other day. It was really interesting how the Giants, just a new hero, seemed to emerge every single day.
Yeah, that's really great. Right, walk-offs in the first 6 weeks of the year. Yeah,
that was really the up and down the lineup thing that was going on. You know, you saw that the production would come from everywhere on different days, and that was when the lineup was really clicking on all cylinders. And it was when you started noting individual performances over a couple of weeks, that when you started seeing the rest of the lineup would just kind of fade out, and that was when things really changed.
Yeah, so that was May 3rd, and the
Giants, any walk-off that beats the Dodgers is pretty great.
The Giants were 17,
but when it's Posey, it's special.
Point. So, and the Dodgers were 13-15, so it was a different time, I'll say that. The other big highlight that was also a huge low light, and that we already talked about, was Pagan's inside the park home run, which was in extra innings, I believe, right? And was a walk-off.
But the Tim Flannery, like, running away, pointing one finger in the air, that actually may be that and also Pagan's hair billowing everywhere as he jumps into home plate. Those two, I think, are my two favorite just visuals from that.
Yeah, and I could definitely see like some commemorative cups or something like that based on the scene that was the end of that game.
They're just going to like curl all the Lincecum. They're going to curl all the Lincecum wings, and they're going to name them Angel Pagan wigs and sell them again. So
it was was just an unbelievable scene when that happened.
The hair.
Was, you know, we're down at that point. We were down one. And what was it? Runner on first, I believe. It was runner on first, right?
Yeah, it was Crawford.
Yeah,
was
so on first. Thankfully it wasn't Posey.
Because more hair.
A triple, and you know, actually Posey and Pagan would have both been on third at the end of that. But, Pagan managed to get one into Triple's alley, and it kicked up into the wall and kicked around a little bit, and he's got enough speed that he made it all the way around. And it was a gamble to send him because the throw was pretty close, so. It was quite an exciting moment, and to finish a game that way is just something you're not going to see very often. So Giants fans were treated to as something special there, although it did signify the end of the season, but whatever. Timmy's no-no. Now, this one kind of came out of nowhere because, you know, Timmy was not having a great season at that point, and he'd had some flashes here and there.
Sure.
But to throw 148 pitches and strike out – crap, what was it? 12, I believe. I'll have to look this up.
Around that, somewhere between 10 and 14.
But, you know, I mean, it was just one of those things where it
no 148 pitches.
148 pitches. And, you know, people were literally saying, like, are we going to have to take this kid out? Because he's at, you know, 130 and he's still got three outs to go. You know, I mean, it was just. It was scary. And at the time, I mean, that was his fifth win. He was 5-9 after a no hitter, which just does not happen very often. So, Edwin Jackson, the only guy to ever throw more pitches in a no hitter at 149.
Yeah,
yep. So pretty interesting game, and definitely a highlight. I was really lucky that I actually turned that game on in like the third inning or something and watched the entire rest of it. And
it was just strange though, because and I don't know if it was because of the way the Tim season had gone, but you noticed he was doing pretty good, but you didn't realize it was a no-hitter until like the fifth or sixth.
I did not realize that. Seriously, it was like the sixth inning and I finally went, oh,
somebody finally like pointed it out. It was either John or it was somebody on Twitter or so. I just remember going like, wait,
yeah, you're like, hold on a second, is that
hold the phone, I think. Wow, my goodness, I do believe this is happening. But I mean, just it was a pretty incredible moment, partly because it was so unexpected that you didn't even notice it during the game at first.
He seemed to get stronger as the game went on too. It wasn't like, you know, he got to 130 pitches and then just eked it out. I mean, it was like
squeezed the last outs out. No, he looked
He looked good. He looked like, hey, man, I could throw 150 pitches, no problem. So,
you know, I think it's amazing. I mean, you have guys like, you know, Nolan Ryan, who's thrown 7 no-hitters, and you certainly get some great pitchers that pitch one or multiple no-hitters, but you have that group of guys, these no-namers, who never amounted to anything in their career, who end up throwing one perfect game or one no-hitter, like a Dallas Braden, you know, or Jonathan Sanchez, or, you know, one of these guys where you're just like, what the hell happened?
How did that happen? Yeah.
And, you know, that might be the case with Petit this year, you know, because who knows what he's going to do in his career. But in a way, I almost think that's what happened to Lincecum, even though he's already a known commodity.
Right.
And the reason I say it is because
it was just the quality of his season this year.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, he didn't have a dominant season this year or last year. So I think just everything aligned, you know, the luck aligned, his performance aligned, everything just went his way that night, just like all these no-name performances.
Take a chunk out of the ground and catch a freaking...
Yep.
And then, as usual, try and put it back.
Yeah. It was one of those magical moments. And the thing is that, you know, Kruko and Kuiper and pretty much everybody in the organization has said... We always thought that Timmy was going to be the next guy to do it out of everybody. You know, he had the no-hit stuff. Kane wasn't really the guy who was going to – I mean, Kane could definitely be capable of it, but Kane was more of a – he's going to throw too many fly balls, and some of them are going to fall in to do it, you know.
Right, just not a lot of them. And, you know, he's I mean, Kane is a guy who's capable of throwing a complete game shutout at any given time.
Yeah.
But Timmy was the one that we always thought would be the one to throw the no-hitter.
Exactly, yeah.
And it has to do with just, like, how the batters tend to end up approaching him. And that makes sense to me, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was just one of those games where just everything came together at that exact right moment. And we got to see a magical performance that night. And, for you know, at the time, the Giants were struggling really hard. And it was one of those things where it's like, this could potentially turn the season around. At least it felt like this might be the magic that we needed, you know? Mm-hmm. Of course, Petit's near-perfect game we must talk about, because that... Well, Timmy's took 148 pitches. Petit got a near-perfect game in 95. could have been 94 if the pitch before it... Or no, it would have been 93, I think, or 92, because the next guy he got out in a couple. So... It was an incredible pitching performance. I mean, I caught wind of it about the sixth inning, and the entire bar I was in finally realized what was happening when I was cheering really loudly for ground ball outs.
Yep.
And Petit just looked like, you know, he had everything working, and it was all on cruise control. It was a joy to watch that kid pitch that game. And if anything, whether he got it or not, it has to prove to him as a pitcher that he has what it takes. He can throw a game like that. So we'll see if that, you know, what that does for him going forward. And I would love to see this guy pitch his way into the fifth starting spot, because I really like his demeanor. I like how he handled the fact that he didn't get the perfect game and still reacted in a really positive way. So it was definitely a beautiful moment. Big, big gut punch to have that ball drop just a couple inches in front of
him. Yeah, it would have been nice if it was just like a clean line drive up the middle or something.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just like you thought it was going to be another Timmy catch, you know, by Hunter Pence. I mean, it looked like it.
Was. He gave it
almost
everything
was.
He had. So. Yeah. Bochy, of course, won his 1,500th game, which I believe puts him second on active managers. Am I right? Or is that third? He might be. I know he's behind.
Leland, I think.
Leland, but I don't know where he matches up. Let's see.
That's a good question. Definitely behind Leland, no doubt.
Right.
Let's see. Not all time. Active. Don't give me all time. All right. I'm gonna check into this, but it was, you know, I mean, we all know, you know, how special of a manager Bochy is, and we have to feel pretty blessed to have this guy running the team for us, because he never gets too high or too low, and he just kind of, you know, just kind of knows what he's doing out there. Okay, so Leland is above him, and yeah, that's the only other active manager. So he is second as far as active managers, and Leland is at 1769. Hold on, Dusty Baker has more too. He does. Okay.
Oh, he's not active right now.
Well, yeah, currently not
active, right.
But he probably will be, right?
Yeah, someone's going to pick him up.
Seems like a safe bet.
Yeah. We also had Pablo Sandoval hitting 3 home runs in a game, and I believe didn't the Giants hit like 9 in that game collectively?
6 in that game.
Okay. Yeah. I knew it was something ridiculous, and 6 is ridiculous for the Giants.
6 is, oh yeah.
Especially for the Giants.
I mean, it's ridiculous anyway, but.
So in that one game, we had more than the left fielders had the entire season.
There you go.
To put that into perspective. We also had Posey Hugs, of course. Posey Hugs, which is Jen Cosgrove's
still
got to
go with
thing.
The Posey Hugs.
She never listens to the show unless she's on it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. No, she's not screaming.
Buster Hugs, which became kind of a meme throughout the season, and not only that, it made its way onto the Jumbotron. So top 5 Buster Hugs of all time. Pretty good stuff. He's had a short career and lots of big moments in it. So
lots of big hugs. Yeah. Wait, well,
and then maybe. The Scudero's walk off walk, which is just, you know,
I thought Scudero. That was it really is though. I mean, you know, I think that people online have been calling it a shrimp lately. I'm still not sure where that comes from, but. I appreciated that. I thought the only thing that to me was funnier than the walk-off walk was Henderson Alvarez for the Miami Marlins getting a walk-off no-hitter.
Oh.
Oh. That was actually great. Pretty epic.
Miami was it was I've it really was. It was on a even better it was a walk-off wild pitch that led to a walk-off no-hitter.
Yeah.
And so you see all these guys pour onto the field and it's like they don't know who to run to first.
Yeah.
The guy who was standing there when the wild pitch happened, the guy who ran home from third, or Henderson Alvarez?
Yeah.
Who was on deck.
Who had basically, at that point, thrown a no-hitter, but his team was not in the lead.
And so it doesn't count as a no-hitter yet.
He's not going to count as a no-hitter unless he, goes to 10.
Unless he finishes it out, and so they finish it out for him.
Yeah.
So. And you could just tell that they were not desperate, but just definitely pressing by the time the last two...
You don't deny hit. Your guy that no-hitter because you couldn't score one run for him. You know?
And I mean, you know, I remember a game a couple of years back, the Angels and Dodgers both no-hit each other, and the Angels won on like an error or something. Wow. Yeah. And I just remember going like, wow.
Yeah.
That you're both, good grief. Like, it was a double no-hitter.
Games, that kind of stuff is going to happen eventually, right?
So that's a great thing about it. Pitchers lose no-hitters before. I mean, they lost a game, but it was a no-hitter.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's because the game ended.
It's very, very rare, but just one of those things. And I always hear the old timers talk about the Marshall Warren Spahn.
Oh yeah,
classic.
I have a whole book about inning. that I'm gonna have to really sit down and go through because that game. I think the book is called The Greatest Game Ever Pitched, and it's hard not to agree.
It's no, I mean, so two guys both go 16 innings each. The Giants win the game 1-0. In the bottom of the 16th, and Marshall gets the win. Spahn gets the loss. I mean, you're never going to see this again. This is just never, ever going to happen.
No, never. Yeah.
Not the number of pitches those guys threw either. Like just
or 200. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And think about this too. Warren Spahn hit a double off of Juan Marichal. He was one of the guys who got a hit. Looking at that box score, it's just nuts. It's like really, really that used to be what could happen. It's just a different time. But that, so those were the highlights. And, of course, also the final Dodgers series, I would say, the Pagan home run and some of those things just to kind of finish off the season. And didn't we have a walk-off in our last game of the year?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's pretty cool, right?
Oh, we had a lot of walk-offs. We just
that's what cool. ended. Yeah. I should probably mention in there that final Zito appearance.
Mm-hmm.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
It was, and I mean, the fact that he came in and he did, he came in just to pretty much as a situational Mark Kotze reliever. But it just.
And that was Kotze's last at bat, too.
That was Kotze's last at bat, too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It was nice to see him get to come back out on the field one more time because we were at his last start, and we all kind of thought, well, that's it. The last time he walked off the field is going to be this time. And. Did you guys see the thing he posted today in the Chronicle?
Yeah, he took
that was great.
Page ad.
That was great.
Full half page. It was a full half page, I believe. Just thanking the fans and the organization for the 7 years that he spent here. Which while you can say what you want about him as a bust as far as the contract is concerned, but during that span, we won 2 World Series and we hadn't sniffed a World Series in a long time. So, I'm going to tip my cap to the guy and say he was a good Giant, and that's it. That's all you need to know about him. All right. Let's definitely thank the Giants PR staff. In particular, a few people, Sarabian and Chad. Who else do we need to thank? We need
Chisholm,
right? Matt Chisholm, definitely Matt Chisholm, for giving us press box access for the year. And you know, hopefully next year we'll be at even more games. And we want to keep this rocking so we can bring you guys the bonusodes. And it was just a damn good time to be able to be at the ballpark and be there in a more of a professional setting. And you know, I got to go to a lot of games as just a fan this year, and both have their merits, but it's just feels really special to feel like you're kind of a part of the team, because we're all incredibly big fans of this baseball team. And it's nice to be there and get to hobnob a little bit with the other press people. So thank you very much for that. We really appreciate that. And let's go ahead and close it off. First, I want to know who will win it all this year. I'll go first, and I'm going to say the Cardinals. I think that the pattern will hold true. It goes Cardinals, Giants, Cardinals, Giants, Cardinals, Giants. That's what's going to happen. Just so everybody knows out there. Got any predictions?
The Tigers look pretty damn strong right now. I mean, they had a hiccup last night because their bullpen does suck. But yes, their hitting and their starting pitching is just so damn strong right now. You play that game last night 100 times, what they did only happens once. So, you know, I think the Tigers
not
are
going to... Not that it wasn't damned impressive, but...
No, it was it was totally impressive. But, you know, they're going back to Detroit now for three. So, you know, they have... Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to close it out. They're probably not going to win three in a row. But I think they have a really good shot of taking two out of three. And then they just got to go back to Boston and take one out of two.
Yeah.
And that's it. So I think they're going to... And then, you know, against the Dodgers or the Cardinals, I mean, the Tigers are an imposing force. But it's funny, the way I'm talking right now is the same way people were talking about the Tigers
last year,
going to the World Series last year.
Absolutely.
Is that how they were going to crush the Giants? It's going to be no contest, blah, blah, blah. And when it happens, Giants sweep the Tigers. Yeah. So it's a game of baseball. You never really know. You never really know.
The fact is, though, a city like Detroit could maybe benefit from something like this.
You know, out of all the teams are left, just from a fan perspective of rooting, I actually want the Tigers to win. And it's more because of default.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's certainly
sort of like, so what's left?
It's what's left. I'm not really happy with the final four, but Dodgers number one got to go. Obviously, I'm tired of the Red Sox and the bandwagon fans, and they've won two World Series. And then the Cardinals have won they're basically the National League Yankees. Yeah. They've won the most world championships in the National League. I don't want them to increase that. Mm-hmm. I really don't. So
you just want them to, we don't want to start like losing our lead, our chance at catching up.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. That's right. So, you know, it's like Tigers haven't done it since
we waited 54 years to start on it. So
we need a chance here to get some more.
Throw Detroit a bone.
I'm gonna guess that you think the same thing as Chad, but go ahead.
You know, I'm not convinced. Yeah. My biggest issue right now is I do think that the Cardinals are gonna get, if it's the Cardinals over the Dodgers, I think that the Cardinals get hit pretty hard by how strong the Tigers pitching is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Tigers have Miguel Cabrera to throw out. But the Cardinals are dangerous up and down the lineup. And that's something that it's easy to forget when you're really looking at a team that has, you know, three guys like Cabrera, Martinez, and Fielder. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing about the Cardinals is, I mean, you look up and down the lineup and suddenly it's like Beltran, Holiday, like John Jay. I mean, you know, you're going to get
tough. You're not going to see an easy out. So
the Cards are a team that can do that thing where all of a sudden offense starts coming from really unpredictable areas.
Yeah.
And I think that could definitely surprise a team that's been having, I mean, you know, the Tigers are not without defensive miscues and bullpen woes. Mm-hmm. If you can survive being hit by their starting rotation and get through that, you stand a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and honestly, all these four teams, all of them are quality baseball teams. And so it's, you know, it's playoff baseball.
It's the playoffs. They all win 90 plus games. I mean, anything can happen. You know, it's not going to be a shocker whoever wins.
So why will we win it all next year? Chad?
Oh, man. They make the key free agent acquisitions. They sign, you know, two big names and they stay healthy next year. That's it.
All right. There you go. Ben?
I think it's got to be they shore up left field, and I think we see the emergence of a couple of key guys. Essentially, I think we see the return of talented Brandon Belt, and I think we see the emergence of Jake Dunning. And I think that those two things together are going to be the last push that a team that's already got some quality needs to actually go the rest of the way.
I agree. I'm going to go ahead and say that Buster Posey has another MVP season next year. And, you know, he shows everybody why he is the brightest star in the National League, even though there's a lot of guys who would challenge him for that. I do think that just as straight up baseball player, he's got the most talent of anybody out there. And I think he's going to come through with close to 30, and he's going to hit 320 plus. And I think he's just going to have a big season next year. And that's why. There you go. And Pablo's going to go nuts, too. Pablo's going to have a fantastic
year. Yeah, walk year.
Yep. Pablo's going to have a fantastic year. And we're all going to be mad when we sign somewhere else, but whatever. We're going to give him for that one more year, and it's going to be fantastic. So there you go. That's going to do it for episode 54, the Sergio Romo episode. By the way, we didn't even talk about Romo, who had a great year and proved that he can be a closer. So that's good. We got that going into next season. It's been a rough season for the Giants pretty much all the way around, but we had a great time watching it all unfold. It's just something about being a Giants fan. No matter what the season is, no matter how bad or good it is, everyone's going to support this team because we love this team and the team loves us. So it's great to be a part of that. I want to thank everybody for listening to the TortureCast throughout the entire season. Tweeting at us, following us on Facebook, doing all that kind of stuff. Definitely check us out on TortureCast.com. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. I am at Willie Dills. Chad is at ChadK21, and Ben is at Fried Duck. And check us out there. Check us out on Facebook. And always, you know, keep in touch with us. Let us know what's going on with you, what your thoughts are, and we'll do the same. And guess what, guys? We'll see you next year. Boom! A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.